Hello. So thank you very much. I am Ryan Nickel, and like John, I'm a particle physicist. Except unlike John, I specialize in a single particle, just the neutrino. And so tonight's topic is big. So I think it's very appropriate that I'm talking to you about neutrinos, because neutrinos are just about the smallest amount of anything that anyone has ever conceived of, ever. So neutrinos were first invented by Wolfgang Pauli back in 1930. And one of the things I like about being a scientist is you have the chance to invent something that has existed since the dawn of time. There are very few other fields. Even the old-fashioned explorers could only find islands that had been there for, you know, millennia, never mind the dawn of time. And so in the 80-odd years since we discovered the neutrino or invented the neutrino, we've managed to find out essentially three things about neutrinos. Now, the first one of these is that neutrinos are neutral. This means unlike the electron or the proton, they don't have an electric charge. The second thing that we've managed to find out about neutrinos is that they're small. So for some reason, neutrinos are much smaller than all the other particles. They're at least 1,000 times lighter than electrons. And this is something that we don't know why they're so much lighter than all the other particles. Now, for those of you with some knowledge of linguistics, you might have been able to work out that neutrino means little neutral one. So two of the three things we found out about the neutrino are its name. The third thing that we've discovered about the neutrino is that before I say this, I should probably say that there are four fundamental forces in the universe. There's gravity, which is the reason, you can jump. There is the strong force that John was talking about earlier with gluons, and this is the thing that binds protons and neutrons together into atomic nuclei. And then there's electromagnetism, which is the thing that binds atoms together into molecules in people and the thing that makes the microphone work. And then there's the weak force. And we call it the weak force because the weak force is much weaker than the other forces. I believe John mentioned earlier that we're not particularly inventive when it comes to names. And in some ways it's good that the weak force is much weaker than the other force, because the weak force is the force that makes the sun shine. And if it was the same speed as the other forces, then the sun would explode instantly, which clearly wouldn't be a good thing for any of us. But the weak force is the only force through which the neutrino participates. And what this means is if you want to build an experiment to detect a neutrino, you need to build an enormous experiment. So John and his 17,000 colleagues have spent an enormous amount of money, a fraction of a banker's paycheck, but still an enormous amount of money building the LHC. And yet still, none of their detectors are ever going to measure a neutrino, because you need a vast detector in order to measure one of these particles. And so I noticed on the poster for tonight's evening that I was listed as a neutrino hunter. I think this is a fantastic job description. It makes me think that I'm a bit like Indiana Jones, except my job is to go to some of the most desolate and inhospitable places on the planet and search for neutrinos. And well, actually, that's remarkably close to what my job is. So one of the experiments I work on is an experiment that flies a balloon around Antarctica. And what it's looking for is high-energy neutrinos that come in, interact in the ice of Antarctica, and produce these little radio pulses that we hope to detect on our balloon. And so what this means is that I get to go spend 2 to 3 months at a time in the coldest, windiest, driest continent on Earth, which, does not immediately sound appealing, but... And we build our experiment. It's an experiment called ANITA, and it's maybe a 30-foot high, 20-foot wide radio detector that we then launch on a helium-filled balloon that's the size of Wembley Stadium, and it circles around Antarctica for 30 days at a time or so. And I've done this twice now, and to date, even though we're using all of Antarctica as our detector, millions of cubic kilometers of ice at a time as our detector, we've detected no neutrinos. After a while, it becomes hard to write these funding proposals. But So a group of my colleagues on our last trip to Antarctica, we thought, you know, this isn't inhospitable enough. We need to go somewhere that's less hospitable than Antarctica. And so we kind of scratched our heads together for a while, and then we came up with the idea of salt domes. I don't know if you've ever heard of salt domes. They're domes of salt. And these things are, you know, several miles across, several miles deep, and they're always in, you know, backwater, unpleasant places like Louisiana. And so I've been on a series of trips where we go down salt mines in Louisiana and we try to work out whether or not radio signals can pass through salt such to the point that we can use the entire salt dome as our neutrino detector. And so what this involves is going to backwater Louisiana. And now Louisiana is a backwater, and so the backwater parts of Louisiana are very backwatery. And then we drive to the salt dome, which is just on the coast of the Gulf of Mexico. It's a couple of hours drive from the nearest hotel. And when we're there, we just to get to the salt dome, you've got to go across a ferry. And Louisiana in August is about 120 Fahrenheit. It's about 90 some humidity. And you're going across a misty ferry first thing in the morning. You feel very much like you're entering the gates of hell. You expect to see three-headed dogs on either side of you any moment. But fortunately, that didn't happen. And then, so we went down the salt mine, and there were four of us down the salt mine, and the first day went okay. We just wandered around the salt mine, said, geez, isn't it hot down a salt mine? And started laying out our equipment to make measurements. And then on the second day, we were down the salt mine, and we were in the far distant corner of the salt mine, the furthest away from where the miners were actually doing the salt mining, so we didn't get in their way, because you know they're making money, and we're just sending little radio pulses through the salt. And while we were there, the evacuation siren sounded. And so we're at the bottom of the salt mine, and the evacuation siren sounding, and we sort of look up and think, well, there's about half a mile of salt above us, and above that is the Gulf of Mexico, and salt dissolves in water. What could possibly go wrong here? But anyway, we were evacuated to the evacuation lift, which means we got to ride on the back of fancy green golf carts that they called gators. It's quite good fun, actually, to be evacuated from a salt mine. I recommend it if you ever get the chance. And as we got to the evacuation lift, one of my colleagues, a guy named Professor David Salzberg, who happens to be the scientific consultant on the Big Bang Theory, the TV show that John mentioned earlier. So down the mine with us, we had maybe £100,000 worth of delicate scientific equipment. And what Dave chose to rescue, he could have chose the expensive pulses or the scope. He picked two things to rescue. One was the bag of sandwiches. The other was the tape measure. Now that's a proper scientist for you. As the watery apocalypse comes, he wants to know both that he'll be well fed and B, how far away that water is. So anyway, our measurements in the salt mine weren't entirely productive. What we discovered is that salt mines wouldn't make good neutrino detectors. A bit less than ideal. But I did discover, while I was in Louisiana, the greatest invention that man has ever made. And it's a place called a daiquiri shack. So it's a little bit of a complicated idea, so I'll try and explain it to you. The idea is that there are shacks by the side of the road that you drive your pickup truck to. It's Louisiana, they only have pickup trucks. They've not invented cars down there yet. You're not allowed to walk up to this building. You have to drive up. And then while you're there, you kind of wind down the window, look at the menu, things like liquid Valium on the menu. You say, can I have a medium liquid Valium, please? And what you get is a bucket, a polystyrene bucket, about the size of your body, filled with ice and alcohol. In your car, well, your pickup truck. But in America, you're not allowed open containers in public. And so to get around this law, they put a little bit of sticky tape on the top of the straw. It's a wonderful thing. We should get this in London. I would buy a pickup truck just to drive it to my local drive-through daiquiri store in London. So, you know, I've tried ice. I've tried salt, and still no neutrinos. So I think maybe for the future the way forward is to go to the desert. So anyone who wants to come to Sahara and try and find neutrinos, you're more than welcome to join me. Thank you.